What's good? What's good? We are back. One and only Paul Masson, live from Vietnam. And I'm really excited to bring on this next guest. Helen from the Bronx, New York, has one of the most unique voices in hip hop. Very, very gritty voice. 4 solo projects under his belt. And some of y'all might know him as 9MM or 9. So let's bring him on. The one and only 9.
Peace.
9, how you doing, man?
How you been, man? What's good?
Chilling. I was wondering if your voice was going to be as gritty talking as it is in the songs.
No, well, not that crazy, but, you know, and especially, you know, in the 90s, everything was a little exaggerated.
Yeah, so I want to start with the voice. Like, when you first started rapping, did you have the voice or did you discover it later?
Well, I always had. I mean, it's my real voice.
You know? It's just kind of deepened it up?
No, it's, you know, there was, I grew up in the 80s, like, and you know, we used to go to the park jams, and there was a song called Operation Eradication.
Okay. It's
a reggae record. And I used to sing that song, and there was a part where the guy was like, the Operation Eradication, them have to run.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Them have to run. When his voice just got real, real crazy in that spot. So, long story short, you know, I got locked up, but it was nothing really, really serious. But while I was in there, you know, dudes is rapping, and I was singing that song too. And it was a Jamaican dude there. I never saw him again in my life. And he said, how come you not use that voice when you do your Yankee rap? I said, my Yankee rap? He said, yeah, when you do the eradication, you get into it. You let it out. Eradicated. He said, when you do your Yankee rap, you're like, yeah, yeah, to the PV. You know, and he walked away. I never seen him again. I got out 6 months later. My voice started developing more.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember calling Flex. It's like, yo, because back then, man, you had to be original. You had to find something that was uniquely you. Unlike the opposite today, they want parakeets, which is why the musical is disposable. It's disposable music. So, but back then, in order to get someone to invest, quote unquote, invest in you, you know, giving you a deal, and, you know, you had to be original. You had to have your own image, your own story, your own, you know, everything. So I told Flex, yo, I think I got something for myself, man. I'm a really enhance the voice and focus more on the deep parts of it. You know, because you hear it when you talk. It was always there. So he was like, yo, let's try it. And went to Jazzy J Studios. Salute to Jazzy J from Zulu Nation.
Uh-huh.
And I recorded a song called Real Street Nigga.
Okay. I don't think I've ever heard that one.
Never came out, but Todd Terry had heard it, the producer Todd Terry. So he requested me to be on the song, 9MM Goes Bang is what he told me I could call it, but he had did the beat. And it was just like a dub plate type of song or something. It was no label, because back then, if you wasn't on a label, it didn't count. It didn't count. You had to be on some kind of record label, you know, otherwise it wasn't real. So we put that record out. And then Flex did 6 Million Ways to Die. That was supposed to be an instrumental record.
Okay.
But I was at the studio along with Tragedy and Talja Hoodlum. Salute to him. He was on the original version. He got taken off the song.
Oh, man.
Due to some nonsense between the label or whatever. But I was unsigned artist. I was me and Flex was trying to get a deal together. We were a group at the time. So he said, yo, man, you need to get on this record. So I got on the record, and he took it to Nervous Record, whatever, you know.
Yeah, and yeah.
They wanted to release it, but I never signed anything with anybody, so I was still a free agent. The plan was for me and him to get a deal as a duo, you know. And so that's what really set me off. That record got on. It made it to Video Music Box.
You pretty much covered a couple of my first questions, because I was going to ask you, how did the Flex situation come about? So you were already in a group with him.
We grew up, we met each other. We were around 16, 17.
Okay.
It was on some DJ shit. I heard him DJing in this dude's basement that I knew in a private house in the Bronx. And I'm like, he was catching this beat that's almost impossible to catch. You know, he's back and forth. I'm like, yo, who is that? And he was like, yo, that's Junior. Because that's what we called him. I said, oh, Rembrandt's DJ? Because he had a rapper of his own. I had met him before. I said, yo, tell him to come outside. And Flex came upstairs, and I was like, yo, you remember me or whatever? And he said, yeah. I said, yo, I'm down with Chuck Chill Out Now, you know, Bronzewood Productions, and we need a DJ for my group, Deuce as well. So you come to the studio tomorrow. So Flex went straight from there, straight to the studio, and we did a promo song for Chuck Chill Out as in the group that I was in. So that's how me and Flex met, and that's how ever since then we was moving together, you know.
Now, was there ever talks of y'all signing with Nervous Wreck with the single?
Nah, he wasn't gonna allow. Flex was really smart. What ended up messing up our relationship? Because we back cool now. That's my brother. You know what I mean? I talk to him constantly. That's my brother. But what caused a little division with us at the time was I was in a rush. I wanted this. I had been through personal stuff. I wasn't trying to. And he had already been in the business. Because remember, I was there the whole time. The Chuck Chill Out when we was carrying records for Chuck together.
Oh, man.
You know, I was there when he got his first shot on the radio when Chuck didn't make it to the station. And a disc jockey named Jeff Fox was like, yo, you got your records? You got Flex? Was like, do I? And Flex tore up Kiss FM. And everybody was like, whoa. And they, you know, and then, you know, Chuck started putting him on the radio with him more and more. So Flex had seen a lot more than I had saw from the other side. So I wasn't really trying to listen. So when I took the profile deal, he wasn't happy, you know, that I did that. But he was doing his own thing. I could see where we were divided. He was becoming a personality. Where he is now, I saw this for him. You know, and the days of the rapper DJ rap group was over. There was no more Eric Rakims. There was no more Casanova C and Mr. and the DJ's name. There was no more of that. There was no more. So, you know, he had to go. He found his place where he was, and I went and did my thing. So,
well, how did the Profile Records opportunity come about?
Well, they was the only ones that wasn't scared to sign me.
Okay.
Because you gotta remember, Flex was walking around with the demo for a minute, you know, to different places. Like we had Loud was interested.
Oh, at the man, time. Loud is it? Yeah, that would have been a nice fit, I think, too.
Yeah, my impatience made me like, you know, me and Flex kind of, yeah, we got into it. And I was like, well, you know, I'm going to just do my thing then, man. You know, we young. I wasn't trying to hear what he was saying. And he didn't really know my financial status at the time, the position, what I was going through. I just got out of the streets, just was getting locked up and going through all this stupid knucklehead shit. So he didn't know my desperation. I just had a child. You know, I had a son I had to take care of and stuff. So I was really trying to get paid quick and get this, you know, get this ball rolling. So when I took that deal, you know, which was a gift and a curse because they were the worst label in the world, you know.
Now, I saw where it said your stage name refers to your date of birth, your shoe size, and your lucky number. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, it used to be 9MM.
Yeah.
I mean, it still is, basically. But the main reason I just shortened it was because of the song What You Want. You know, when I first got that beat, I didn't really like it. Like, to be honest.
You didn't like it?
Nah, I couldn't hear what it could be.
Wow.
I was like, you know, because this is the era, like, you know, Wu-Tang is out. Niggas is coming. Everybody's beats is not. Nah, listen, though. Beats is all crazy and stuff. So I'm like, I don't know, man, what I could do, you know. We already had to deal with Profile.
Yeah.
So he was like, I'm trying to find a single, man. We need a hit because we don't have the support, Bad Boy. We don't have that support. He said, we got to have something that's out the gate. When it come on, it's so original, it's so different, it could survive amongst the monsters that were out there already, you know. So when he gave it to me, I went home. And I started digging it. You know, I'm drinking. I started getting into it. But I'm still talking, cursing throughout the whole record. I'm like, I get fucked if I do get fucked. If I don't, you know what I'm saying? I'm, you know, and the hook was, what you want, nigga? You know what I'm saying? So I go to his house all excited and shit. And I'm spitting the verses. And he's looking at me going, yo, what is wrong with you? He was like, can't you hear? He said, you got it. He said, but the language, what you... I was like, so what I'm going to say, I get damned if I do, and damned if I... He said, yes! Do shit like... So I changed it, and my name replaced what you want, nigga, so it wouldn't be what you want, Non-Double M. That wasn't going to work. So what you want, nine. So we went up to the label with it. I performed it. I remember I spit it in the A&R's office. All I had was the cassette tape. And Special Ed was sitting in the same room, and he was like, you mind? I was like, nah, I want it at the air, you know? So he put the beat on, I start spitting, and they was like, it really put the ball rolling. They was like, yo, we got to shoot the video. We got to get this done. We got to hurry up. We got to move. Because when they heard it, they kind of knew the same thing everyone else kind of knew, especially at that time, you know? It was more free. There was no rules yet. You didn't have to follow any formulaic music. You could really basically step out and do original things.
I mean, the record peaked number 3 on the US rap charts, it said. I mean, what was
because I looked at the chart. I'll never forget that. Every time somebody say something, I'm like, y'all was number 3. You know what number 1 was? Biggie. You know what number 2 was? Biggie? Craig Mack.
What was it? Flavor in Your Ear?
Craig Mack was Get Down, I think.
Get Down, yeah. But Craig Mack was hot at that time.
But it was still a machine. That machine was in full motion, you know what I mean?
So that was two Bad Boy artists, literally. At one
I had
two.
No budget behind me as far as that record did everything on its own, really. My video cost $15,000. At that time, that's dirt, you know? The dirt money. Videos was 200,000 plus. You know what I mean?
Damn. I saw you had a lawsuit against a Jeep company because they were using the song. What came about with that?
They contacted me before and said, yo, we want to sample you. You know, KRS had did a track and he put Steady Bouncing in Jeeps on the New York street, Steady Bouncing in the song. So he was like, yo, y'all going to have to, I don't know what he did. How Chris moves, you know. But when they contacted me, I said, well, nah, y'all can't sample me, but I'll come to a studio, you pay me, and I'll say it over. I'll alter the line. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, I don't want that, you know, you to use the sample.
Yeah.
I didn't like the way it sounded because they sped it up. So it sounded more steady bouncing than Jesus. It sounded crazy to me. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, nah, I'm going to come do it. So I went and did it, and they used the sample anyway, like I wasn't going to know. So I got at them again, and they tried to send me some measly money, like a little $5,000. I said, nah. By that time, I had done a voice commercial for Burger King.
Okay.
And I made like, I shit you not, man, close to 50 G's.
Damn.
Off the
residuals. Was that local or a national commercial?
It was a commercial. They had a commercial called BK for You or something, and this dude was going, BK? He was singing. Yeah. And I was behind him going, BK. He said, for you, BK for you. That's it. That's all I said.
$50,000 for that.
No, not up front. They gave me 2 G's to do it, but I'm a member of ASCAP, so that's a commercial.
Oh, okay, so you got some royalties.
It was on TV, so the check started coming in from the money from them. Oh, my God, it was crazy. So I had already known what a commercial pays.
Yeah.
So when I went and got the lawyers and got involved, they pulled the commercial from they pulled it off the air.
The Jeep joint, yeah.
And the lawyer was telling me, yo, we're gonna be in court for 10 years with them. He said, you can't afford that. He said, they took it down, no harm, no foul. You're gonna have a hard time with it too because you can't prove it damaged you in any way. Because nobody knew it was you. So it was a lot of, you know, so they took it down and, you know, that was that.
So I gotta ask you about this song, man. Hit 'em like this. Like, what was going on when you came up with that song? Like, what was the thought process behind that, man?
Being different. It started off as a joke. It started off as a challenge.
It was definitely different, especially even at any time of hip hop. I never heard nothing like that at first. You did both voices, right?
Yeah, it was a challenge. Yeah. You know what I mean, dude? So you can't, because I was joking around with it. Because, you know, it was a place off Snoop's name. He was Snoop Doggy Dog.
Okay.
So it was like, you know, it was a play off his name. Joking. It was just something I would bug out. I would just go to the studio sometime and I would just put on beats and I would go in the booth and just do a whole bunch of crazy shit and just wild, just trying stuff. Like, I was never afraid to fail, so I would try a bunch of different stuff and then take it home so I could listen to it. It wasn't for nobody else. To me, this was me as an artist trying to, you know, I'm painting my you ain't supposed to see this painting yet, but I'm gonna try to paint it my way until I figure out how I want to paint it. You know what I mean? Our attitudes were different. I came up different in this. You know, I came up with legends, old school hip hop dudes would tell you, you know, you had to be original. You had to always try to think outside the box if you wanted to survive in this shit, you know? So we ended up recording it and, you know, we turned it in to see what they were saying. They was like, yo, who's the other guy, man? We want to sign him. Said they wanted to sign him. So I kept it going. I was like, well, nah, I'm going to take him somewhere else. So they never knew.
Yeah. It was definitely a fun record. You know what I'm saying?
Nobody knew. I used to go online and see people saying, yo, Nine is doing the Froggy Part 2. And this one dude said, no, he's not. I know Frog. He was killed in North Carolina. I'm reading this shit crying. I'm like, I'm laughing my ass off. Whenever I go, I always go check the comments on that song because there's always some real funny shit. People saying they know him or they hung him. Like,
they say he got killed in North Carolina?
That's what one comment said. It was like,
that's
yo, he was
where I'm
killed.
At right now. North Carolina. Fayetteville, North Carolina.
All right. North Carolina used to be home for 90s hip hop until y'all got your own rappers, your own sound. You know, before that,
well, we don't even really got our own sound though. Still, like you know,
well, y'all got on. Ain't the baby from there?
Yeah, and J. Cole and Little Brother.
Yeah. And they sound like, you know, New York niggas.
Yeah, yeah. So we don't got our own sound per se.
Okay. Well, when the South emerged, when Atlanta and all that, they started being booked there more. Like it was more familiar, the accents more close, more relatable subjects that they were talking about, you know.
Now what can you tell us about Rob Lewis and Tony Stout? Like they was your early producers.
Well, my mama told me if you ain't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing.
Oh, so you don't got nothing good to say? Okay.
Not about Rob Lewis.
Okay.
Or Tony Stout, really. You know.
All right, so let's get to this next question. Your second album, I feel like it was better than the first. My opinion.
Me too. The first album was the album I had to make.
Yeah.
The second album was the album I wanted to make. So you see the difference. It was I had to make those songs that I did. I was on Profile Records, no backing, no nothing. We had to be intelligent. I had been around this game for a long time. Andre Harrell was my first manager when I was 14 years old. Man. I wrote with Jekyll and Hyde. I wrote some of the stuff on their album as a kid. You know, I had Mr. Hyde at my house. I'm a child. You know, you had to say hi to my mom and all of that, make sure this is a grown man doing it in the house. You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
He was like, I believe in him. He's going to be so he can really write. That my thing was always I still can. It was I could write. My pen was just, you know. It was noticed early by some people because, you know, DLB from the Fearless Four taught me how to count bars and structure a chorus when I was 14 years, 15 years old. My man Pumpkin, rest in peace, King of the Beat. He made those songs, Pumpkin and the All-Stars for Profile Records.
Okay.
He made Love Rap. He's the he drummer, he played. He lived down the street from my partner, who lived next door to Chuck Chillout. So I grew up, you know, right there with these guys. I saw professionals early. Everybody I saw was a professional. They was, you know, in the industry. It wasn't just like a bunch of dudes from the neighborhood or something that was making music. I was being groomed by professionals. You know what I mean? So when he heard me, took me to DLB's house, he said, yo, this kid can rap. He won't stop bugging me, but he can't. He don't know how to count bars and he don't know how to do this. And DLB took the time out, and I saw him, and you know, at the 50th, we did a show that he was on the same car with me at, what was it, Charlie Mack's 50th, 50 MC's live mixtape. It had 50 acts back-to-back, and it was in Atlantic City at a stadium. It was crazy, so I got to see DLB there and tell him, and he remembered everything. He was like, that was you? And I was like, yeah, man, that was me. I'm a little kid, and you taught me how to write hooks, how to structure, how to count bars, everything.
So I want to ask you about a guy I interviewed on the show, which I feel like you got your biggest collab is with Tim, and that's Smooth the Hustler. It seems like y'all guys got a really good relationship.
Well, I mean, we did that song. I didn't know him, but he was on the label. He got signed.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
He got signed, so I had this hook. You know, I wrote this hook, and I had this, you know, and it was like when I heard his project, because I heard his album before. Of course, I heard it before it came out, so I was there.
Okay.
You know, in the office, they was playing stuff, and I was like, yo, his voice would be perfect for this, you think? Because I didn't even know him before that. And they contacted him, and he came in, and he knocked it out. You know what I mean? And so that's really the extent of it, though. Like, we don't...
Okay. But you also had him on a later album, too, though, like the Snow Goons, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know how that business works. They just go out and find features that, you know, I request a few, and we're just trying to fill in the blanks. Okay. With that album, we was just trying to, you know, I was just trying to put something out, you know, with Snow Goons. And they came with a, you know, a decent plan, decent, you know, offer for me to, and we sat down, because we had tried to do it maybe in 2013, but my head was nowhere into trying to, you know, to do something like that, just because basically it's an overseas album.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know? Now, on the second album, it felt like there was, like, some songs in there that had, like, a medieval kind of feel.
Yeah, the violins and the...
Yeah,
was searching for a sound, you know, at the same time. Searching for, because, you know, violins were very effective for me with What You Want, but we didn't want to do that again, you know what I mean? We didn't want to do that same type of violin thing, so it was like, let's take it up so I can, you know, really start talking some shit and... showing pockets and lyrics, and you know, I wanted to, like I said, it was the album I wanted to make, you know, and I'm glad I did, because they balance each other out. It's kept me alive for quite some time. I got the What You Want type of stuff, then I got overseas. That Cloud Nine album is like it's gospel.
I can only imagine, man. I mean,
it's gospel,
there's a lot of really good records on there,
and at that time, really Profile was folding. We knew it was, because Lion King should have been I thought this is gonna blow their heads off.
Yeah.
Like Lion King, and I'm telling the truth, and I'm sure, you know what I mean? You know, and I predicted the future, because everything I'm saying in that record is what happened.
Well, from what I've seen, they didn't do no promotion, but just maybe two videos.
No,
and it feel like they low budgeted the Lion King video tremendously.
No, they did. They flew me to San Francisco. You wouldn't even know I was in San Francisco. We was in some cave where but that was all the director. Rest in peace, Michael Lucero. He was kind of nuts. He was a nature dude, and nigga gave me peyote while I was out there, man. I almost lost my fucking mind. I was bugging. Never again. That's just, you ever did that shit?
No.
Don't. Don't. Like, you hallucinating and seeing shit?
Yeah.
Yo, I've never, that's, it was a wild experience, man.
That's like a Native American thing, right?
Yeah, man. It's woo.
So, your third album was called Quinine. Is that like that plan or something like that?
Quinine is what they cut the dope with. You remember Goodfellas when he said, this is before. See, quinine is actually a healing agent.
Okay.
You know, it comes from a plant. It was an inoculation for white people to survive in Africa. They had to get a shot in the beginning.
Oh, for real?
Mosquitoes is killing y'all.
So it was like a vaccine kind of?
Yeah, quinine. You can look it up. So remember in Goodfellas when he said, I gotta give this a whack of quinine, and they used to cut cocaine with it.
I don't remember that part. I'm gonna have to go back and watch it now.
He said, I gotta give this a whack of quinine before I put Sandy on the plane with it. He was talking about the cocaine he had just purchased. But anyway, it's a healing agent. They switched it to lactose in the 80s when they started making crack. That's why people got all skinny and sucked up, because Richard Pryor and these guys were getting high on coke since the 60s, and they never looked like crackheads.
Yeah,
they never looked the part. And there's a reason why, because it was being cut with a healing agent. Once they cut it with lactose, it's a baby laxative. It dehydrates you, sucks you up. Next thing you know, you get that look, that crackhead look that we know today, you know?
Damn, you learn something new every day, man.
Yeah, man.
Now, what can you tell us about that album?
The Quinine album?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was, I was just coming out of what, because I was basically kind of done with the way things was going after I got off of, because see what happened with Profile is they sold the label to Arista.
Okay. Well, now, they ran out of money, right?
Well, no, when they first sold the label to Arista, the dude, the A&R dude that was there, I can't remember who he was, but he was telling me like, yo, we really wanted you, we want Camp Low, and we want Smooth. So we can make this happen. But then there was a lawsuit between Arista and Profile because Profile didn't include the Run DMC catalog in the deal. So we sat for 4 years.
Yeah.
I went through all of that crap. I tried to get out of it. I had lawyers. I had, there was clauses in the contract that you couldn't sue for release while the label was being sued or the label was involved in action or judgment. So 4 years of this crazy shit. So by the time we did get to Arista, none of the people worked there that was interested in us as artists.
Yeah.
But they still wouldn't let me go. So what they did was they gave me a demo fund. They gave me maybe, I want to say like 35, maybe 40,000. Told me to go make some songs. You know, I pocketed that shit and gave them some demos I had. And they told me that I sounded like DMX.
What?
Yeah.
But you were out before DMX.
Yeah. Didn't matter. Crazy. Didn't matter. He was 3 million albums in by then. He sold 3 million copies.
So, and I totally forgot Run DMC was on Profile. And that's crazy. So they tried to sell everything but the Run DMC
catalog.
Which, so not that I could blame him, man. Like,
yeah, but this was him. This was his way of destroying his artists and his people as well. I truly believe that. Steve Plotnicki's a piece of shit.
Damn.
Which is something, you know. I'm not afraid to say it. And, you know, I wouldn't want to run into him on an elevator. It wouldn't be good for him.
So I was listening to the King album yesterday.
All right.
And it's actually the first time I heard it. A really good album, man.
Thank you.
Like the features. I mean, you got Conway the Machine on there. I was shocked at that. I was like, yo, he got Conway on there? You got Rusty
Jugs.
I really liked
the Griselda thing when they was moving, you know what I mean? Before, you know, I still like it. I liked his story. I thought it was really dope. And he reminded me so much of someone who the first time we hear them, you know. You know what I mean? Like the first time you hear Biggie, you knew. First time you heard Nas, you knew.
Yeah.
He had that same thing. Because the first time you heard some people, you didn't know. Like, I didn't know with Jay-Z the first time I heard him, that it would turn into what it did, but, you know.
You also had, what, Rusty Jugs, Chris Rivers, Smooth the Hustler, and you had Kool G Rap. Have you been wanting to work with him for a while?
The wild shit is I'm down with him now.
Okay.
He's executive producer of my project. He's, I'm on his new album that's coming out on Rock Nation. It's called Crime Audiobook. It's an amazing album. He's on Rock Nation.
He's got an album on Rock Nation coming?
He's on Rock Nation. I hope I'm not spoiling too much. I mean, I should have asked him.
I was about to say, I don't know if that...
He got an ad for it up. And at the end of the ad, it says Rock Nation. So I'm not giving anything away that he hasn't already... you know, but funny thing is, I didn't really know him when he got on that album. They contacted him. And said, yo, he said he'll do it. Will you do it? Like, he knew who I was. Because I didn't know him, really. I met him once or twice, but I didn't know him. So what happened was I'm working with a producer named Nick Price, who was actually producing on G-Rap's album. This was years ago. And I said, yo, you think you can get a feature? Because me and him, we just putting music together. Because I'm definitely coming back out. So it was like, it's going to be right. You know, I'm not rushing. Yeah. I don't have no desire to rush. And so we're there now, though. But... long story short, he got on the song and he heard me and he was like, yo, ask him if he'll hop on this joint with me. So I'm like, oh shit, all right, no doubt. So I jump on that record. Next thing you know, he contacts me and says, yo, let's click up, man. Wherever I go, you go down with me now. Let's move. I'm executive producer, shit. I'm gonna get features. We're gonna help. We're gonna make this happen. You know, he said he felt like of all the people he knew in the game, like I don't get any real you know, recognition or respect or credit. And he wants to help me change that. He hears something different. So, you know, it's the biggest alley-oop I ever could have asked for. This is an icon. This ain't a legend. This dude is an icon. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know if you know DV Alias Christ, but I was on the phone with him the other day, and he was trying to, like, yo, if you give me a list of cats you're trying to interview. And I told him, man, like, I've been trying to get in touch with this cat, Nine, man. For some reason, I've been wanting to interview this Nine forever, man.
Right, right. Appreciate that.
Now, have you ever had any rap beefs?
No.
I didn't think so.
Even with, I want to clear something up on here, too. Like, I used to get tormented when DMX came out. You know, everywhere I went. I went to the store with my wife. We're in IKEA. Somebody recognized me. Yo, Nine, what's up? Yo, you Nine, right? What's up? Next thing out there, my office, yo, that nigga DMX stole your stamp. He took your shit. I heard that so much to the point where when people would ask me, yo, you Nine? I used to be like, nah. Nah. They said, yo, you look like him. I'm like, nah, it's not me. Because I didn't want to hear what was next, which was his name, DMX. Now, I try to explain to people all of the time. I loved X.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there similarities? Yeah. Do I think he borrowed some things here and there, manipulating the voice? Yeah, of course. He realized he could reach that octave and that octave level, and he did the same. That's hip hop. That's not, you know. But he had every attribute I don't have. Like, X is important to this culture. He was important to the culture. He was important to black, to everyone. You know what I mean? His soul was pure. Like, I have no dislike or was never, you know, there was a time I was feeling away sometime. I had said something to him once when I ran into him, something slick, and he was like, yo, you think I took something? Come get it. You know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? But
he's definitely a competitor.
We were totally different artists. I mean, I'm way more lyrical, and that's not a shot, but I'm way more about bars and lyrics. X is not that. He's a totally different.
Was more like a storyteller kind of.
X was like a representative, man. To me, there's an Earl Simmons in every single neighborhood you go to. You'll find, because I knew about 10 Earl Simmons. I'm just saying, people with his attributes or his characteristic. You love him. You got to watch yourself around him sometime. He speaks from the heart, so he might say something you don't like. There's always a guy like him that's, you know, but everybody got love for him. So I tell people all the time, that's where the comparison stops, at the sound of our voices. But other than that, I didn't have any of those attributes he had, which is why, you know, he was able to, you know, once he did that, it was very difficult for me to get a label behind me, which is why Aristotle was like, you know, nah, we're going to let you go.
But, like, y'all's voices, his isn't as gritty as yours is, though. Yours is... like
there was
a higher level of gritty.
There was moments. Like, you don't remember? Y'all been eating long enough now. Stop
being greedy. I tell my dog that all the time.
I sound like him saying
it
right now.
Every day, that line every day.
What? I mean, it's there. You know, it's no accident or secret. It's just my luck.
I'm going to bite you, snatch the... Yeah.
It's just my luck that a dude that talented ended up being... You know what I mean? Or with that much to offer to the culture, you know what I mean? But I have nothing, I don't care about things like that. To me, it always boils down to the music.
Well, he was the first, like, mainstream rapper, I think, if I'm not mistaken, to drop 2 albums in the first year.
Right, right. And no matter what anybody says,
you know how hot he was.
I have credit for introducing that sound, that type of approach to the culture.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm a Slick Rick in a way. I bought something that was never there before. You can't take that from me. You know what I mean? It's the truth. I bought something that was never there before. You know?
So what's next for you?
Well, I'm like I said, I'm doing this album right now. You know, I got Funkmaster Flex back in my corner. He's helping executive producers. So it's going to be, you know, I'm sitting on over 100 records. So, you know, all we do is record. My partner, Nick Price, shout out to him, my DJ and producer. He's, we work. He gives me, I just go over there, he puts something on, I take it home, I go back, I record. Like, we actually stopped because it was getting too redundant. So I'll take 3-month breaks, but I'm sitting on a lot of real powerful records. I got features, I got a lot, I got G Rap on, of course, you know. So we're gonna introduce that. I'm on G Rap's album. There will be a video for the song that we did together, which is produced by Alchemist.
Oh man.
So yeah, I'm gonna pop out the right way. I was like, if I'm gonna come back out, you know, a lot of people and my peers are all making music. We have to understand, if we don't make this music, we're not gonna hear it. So I'm making shit because I wanna hear. This is what I wanna hear. I don't care about, you know, platinum, stardom, and watches and all that. I don't, you, come on, man. We're in our 50s. We don't care. We know how stupid
Yeah.
all of that. We know how stupid all of that shit is. We doing what we wanna do, making money doing it. Living comfortable, being happy, doing what you wanna do with what's left of you know. Especially last year, this time, February, I had a stroke.
Oh
So
man, sorry to hear that.
I know how quick shit could be. I couldn't talk, you know, at
Damn.
first. It took me like over 8 hours, like 6 hours later after I was in the hospital, I was able to speak. So I was lucky I had no permanent damage. You know,
Yeah.
but I know what that how quick and how easy my blood pressure was all twisted and not taking care of myself properly. So now I'm in the gym, I work out, I eat right. I'm, you know, it's a wake-up call, but it also shows you how fragile life is in the demographic, the age group that we're in.
Yeah.
So you gotta go and just do what you love doing, man, until the lights go out. Hip hop is forever, you know?
Yeah, do you think that the hip hop 50th anniversary, around that time, you think it kind of lit a fire under a lot of artists from like the 90s era?
Well, I think it got exposure
Yeah.
for a lot of dudes. The problem with that also is you got a lot of dudes that, you know, haven't developed their sound. Like I'm gonna be talking about a whole bunch of different shit this time. It's not gonna be the same. I'm not rhyming for
Yeah.
the sake of rhyming. This is gonna be grown man bars the way they should be said to these little niggas, to these motherfuckers out here. I'm gonna talk to them like they daddy. You know what I mean? I'm a spank rappers like they father. Like I'm disappointed in what you've done to my culture. I'm disappointed. You know, it's not all complaining and stuff, but I'm talking my shit, but in the right way.
Yeah.
I'm not a kid. I'm not talking about selling drugs because I don't sell drugs. I haven't sold. Even when I used to sell drugs, I didn't talk about it when I got on because to me that was insane.
Yeah, I
To
never heard you say nothing about it.
And I used to do it for real.
Yeah.
Never successful. If I made an album, it would be called The Worst Drug Dealer Ever. You know, I broke every rule in the Ten Commandments, crack commandments. So, my song would be a little different. It would be like, you know, how not to be a drug dealer.
Now, is there somebody like a producer or artist that you've always want to work with that you still ain't worked with yet?
I mean, to be honest, man, it's about the song. Like
Okay.
if I hear something and I'm like, yo, you know who would be perfect? Who to me it has to make sense. It has to be, you know. But of course, I would say I want to work with people that would scare me. If that makes any sense, like I would want to go in the booth with Jay-Z. I want to go in the booth with Jadakiss. I want to go in the booth with because it's scary to me. Because I know
Okay.
if I'm not A type, you're gonna get chewed. So I'm gonna try to rip their heads off. It's gonna bring something out of me that, you know, that I think that's the reason we used to do this, was to get to a level where you could rap with someone who makes you aware that you have to be your best right now. You have to be at your best right now.
I've always said Jadakiss is like the ultimate feature because, I mean, he's
Sure.
never gonna slack on a song. I don't care
And I
who's
would
on
love
the
to rap
song
with,
with
I
him.
would love to do to have a collab with him as well, but you know. Everybody got Jadakiss.
Yeah.
It's like
Yeah.
he's turned into the you need to save your project? Call Jada. It's like
Yeah.
he should do a commercial, yo. You want to see? Because that's what it looks like. Like you trying to
Yeah.
eat off of his. No disrespect to anyone who has him on their songs and stuff, but I'm just saying he's on like a lot of records. You know what I mean?
Do you pay attention to like any of these things that go on in the hip hop, like the Kendrick Lamar, Drake beef,
Of
or
course. I mean, I'm hip hop 24/7. I mean, this is what I you know, this is it's a sub religion basically at this point. That's been my whole life since I was 14, 55.
man, so it'll pretty much go the way you thought it would.
No. I didn't think it was going to be a homicide. This is the biggest homicide we've ever seen. We've only seen five homicides in hip hop as far as battling. Five times where people engaged and somebody died, like, and it fucked up their character, their persona, their record sales, their business, like, just fucked up everything. It's only happened five times.
So I think I know two of them. What's the five?
What do you think is your? Tell me what your two is.
I know one of them has got to be 50 Cent, Ja Rule, right?
Yes, of course.
I want to say maybe KRS-One, MC Shan.
Yep, you know that was the first one.
Okay. So
and there's been lots of battles.
There's two more. There's two more. You had Kumo D and L, but
you've had Kumo D and L, but nobody died. Nobody was looked at. They still both kept their fan bases. It didn't switch up on them.
But the same thing with Jay-Z and Nas. Nobody really died.
Yeah, nobody died. Nobody died. Ice Cube and N.W.A. Ice Cube killed them. It was never the same. He said, yo, I seen you in a video with Michelle A looking like straight bozos. I saw it coming. That's why I went solo. It was over. And they because never
they
was the same.
They ended up breaking up after that little while.
Exactly.
That, right?
Yeah.
And what's the other one?
So we said Ice Cube, and so you got me messed up now. Maybe
Ice Cube, NWA. The first one was KRS-One, MC Shan. We had Ja Rule and 50
Ja Rule
Cent.
And 50. Okay, so
Kendrick
there's four.
And Drake. And
there's only four then. There's only four.
Okay.
And this is the biggest one ever. He got dissed at the Grammys.
So this is even worse than Ja Rule.
The Grammys. The Oscars. He got dissed at the Oscars. Dude said, yo, this is the part where Kendrick comes out and calls Drake a pedophile. And then he laughed, the host. And then
the
he said,
Super Bowl. Did you say the Super Bowl too?
That was crazy. The whole 10 million people watched people go A minor. Like, come on, man. Drake looked different. He sound different. I liked his music, some of it. I took it for what it was because I like music. I'm not just if it's not hip hop, that's not important to me. I like good music, so I know what I make. I don't care what, and I usually like things that I don't make, that I'm not capable of doing, which is what I thought it was all about. People sharing their crafts and sharing their art. I like Future. I like Gunna. I like those dudes. I think they make great songs when I'm in the mood to hear that. It doesn't take away, doesn't take my hip hop pass away because I like some, you know, some of the young music is music. You know what I'm saying? I'm an artist. I'm not a thug. I'm not a street. I'm an artist. So I appreciate art.
Yep. Well, I appreciate you taking time out, man. Before we go, any shout outs you want to do?
Yeah, man. Salute my brothers, Funk Flex, Coogee Rap, Nick Price. Jesse West. I got Jesse West on.
Okay.
I got a joint. He did a couple joints for me. So, you know, and everybody out there, man, that's trying to keep this culture alive, man, and keep it going in the way that we want to see it go. So, you know, I support all the old artists, everybody who comes out and puts out new projects, new material. I try to support it as much as I can. I listen to it, download it, purchase it, whatever, because that's the only way that it's going to resurface is we have to show the engine, the machine that's running things, that is still a viable product, which I hope one day there's adult contemporary hip hop separated from everything else because it's not fair. That's not even hip hop that these kids are making. It's not hip hop. So why should we have to compete with something that, you know, it just doesn't make sense. But we'll see.
There's a lot of talk about that, you know.
Hopefully it's coming. It's coming to fruition. I got some inside news, you know, like I said, with the Roc Nation signing, G-Rap, giving him this project, is showing that, you know, they're trying to separate the categories and look at it in a different way. So hopefully that is coming forward and you'll hear a lot more music from people that we want to hear from.
And hip-hop doesn't have, like, the classic hip-hop stations. Like, they got classic rock and stuff, too.
Right. Because it wasn't treated that way, but it's still young. Yeah. It's still young.
It is.
That's why when people might find it strange to see people like me still rapping or still what they call rapping. I hate being called a rapper. I'm an artist. But still being an artist. And it's like because there was no examples of this before us. We are the foundation. So who knew when we were all going to stop? All those guys that used to call people old, they still rapping now. Now they, you know what I mean? Because they can still do it. If you can still do it, you can still do it. You know, it's not boxing.
Yeah, I hate when they say, you know, like, it's a young man's game. I feel it might be a young man's game of getting on, but to stay on, it's got to be an old man's game.
Right, exactly. And you know, one thing I want to just part with this, you know, they say it's, you know, like what you just said, it's a young man's game. But the problem that people are having is the elder statesmen are still talking like children sometimes on their songs. That's where we have a problem. You can't be 50 talking about you slinging the block and you spin with the hammer. And I don't want to hear that shit from a grown-ass man because I know you're not doing it. And if you are doing it, you're stupider than anyone could possibly be. If you're 50 years old, you're on the block. Something's wrong with you.
Smoother Hustle said the very same thing in the interview I did with him. Like, if you 50-something years old, still rapping about things you did when you was 20 and stuff like that. Yeah,
you ain't grown up. I feel sad for you. I had no life. You know? Yeah. And that's what makes me know you were lying back then, because if you're still talking about it now, it was a lie then. Because if it was the truth then, you would have learned something or you'd have suffered something from it. Nobody does all of this shit that we say we do in records without some suffering attached to it. Yeah. Even your conscience. Your conscience is going to call. You shot a dude when he was 22. He died. Now you 51. Your conscience is going to come at you. God going to come at you. Your soul going to eat at you. And if we don't see that, then we know you was lying.
Yep. You know? Well, I do the music reviews on Saturdays too, man. So if you ever want to send an MP3, you know, I'll send you over my email.
Yeah, keep
address.
In touch, man. Yeah, send me everything. Text me everything. You got my number. Text me everything. I'm going to send you some stuff as soon as it starts dropping.
All right, will do, man. Enjoy the rest of your night, man.
You too, brother. Thanks for having me. Peace.
All right, peace. Peace. Well, there you have it. Nine, man. I've been trying to interview this cat for a hot minute, man. I was just talking to DV Alias Christ the other day when he was like, yo, man, make a wish list of cats you trying to interview. I was like, man, I'm trying to get in touch with Nine, and I just happened to come across the Twitter and find the email address and hit him up. Definitely interesting interview. Make sure y'all go back and check out the albums, you know, from Nine. If y'all haven't heard them back in the days, you got Nine Lives, you got Cloud Nine, and you got Quinine, and then you got the King album produced by Snow Goons. So a lot of y'all Snow Goons hip-hop heads know what the deal is. You got Conway on there. You got Rusty Jux, Chris Rivers, Cool G Rap, who he said is going to be executive producing. And he's on Cool G Rap's album, he said, who's signed to Roc Nation. That's very interesting. And, of course, Smoother Hustle on that, you know. But appreciate y'all tuning in for another episode of Live from Vietnam. And I think tomorrow I got Afu Ra. He'll be coming in from the Czech Republic, so we'll be doing that about 12 p.m. Eastern time because he's like 6 hours ahead. And I just booked Mad from the Goats. If y'all don't know Mad from the Goats, he had the song. They had the song, I'm Not Your Typical American. Not Your Typical American. Yo, it's crazy. Like, I didn't realize Nine was signed to the same label as Run DMC. Of course, you had Smoother Hustle over there. They said, and Camp Low. That's probably why the Camp Low situation, you know, didn't go too well after a little while. Because Profile Records, you know, selling the label and then doing some janky stuff where they didn't sell the catalog, so they got sued. And then they couldn't do nothing because they were stuck on the label. That's the nature of the business where they need unions for the musicians, where unions can step in and help the artists get off of the label. Because it's not the artist's fault that a label is getting sued by another label because the label tried to do some shady business. You really shouldn't be held liable for the label doing shady business and whatnot that had nothing to completely do with you. But I appreciate y'all tuning in. Another episode of Live from Vietnam. The one and only Paul Masson. I'll be doing music reviews this Saturday, probably like 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern time. And I think it's going to be 4 p.m. Eastern time and whatnot. So once again, thank y'all for tuning in. Peace, and I'm out.